is episode 266 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Yeah, I'm still buzzing over this Rams victory and feeling pretty good. So it was nice to get on here and get to talk about this twice. I mean, that was kind of the bonus of having such a early game on Thursday.
Yeah.
Is that we're now able to discuss the fact that we beat them down twice.
It's just a bonus of them playing on Thursday night. They get the win over the Rams on Thursday night. But I have to tell you, Adam, out of all the things that I've heard over the past week, it's the Seahawks fans and anybody else. The first thing when I walked in and saw Anthony Knockreiner in the radio studio this week, he's like, oh, well, good thing Greg Zuerlein missed that field goal, so you guys won. There was there were so many other things that happened in that game. Jason Myers missed a field goal. The Seahawks missed an opportunity to put it away. I'm not going to dwell on one missed field goal and be like, oh, well, the Seahawks should have lost.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at it in terms of, okay, so the Rams have won the division the last 2 years. Well, heck, you know, last year I could peg probably three losses on Seabass.
Right.
Right. And that makes it so then we're now the winner of the division. So, like, you know, everybody has their ups and downs with kickers. Yeah, it just happens. Like, kicker losses happen. It's not like it's so fluky that you can write it off. Like, it happens quite often, actually.
Yeah.
And not only that, but if you're like, well, good thing Zuerlein missed a kick. Well, maybe they shouldn't have freaking false started right before that and gone back an extra 5 yards.
Yeah. It wasn't a false start. It was a delay of game, wasn't it?
Delay of game. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, pre-snap penalty. How about that?
Yeah.
And then be like, oh, well, we just got unlucky.
Well, anything over 40 yards. Shoot. You see kickers missing extra points now that they've moved the extra point yardage back in these past years, and having those plays come into, factoring relatively significantly into games.
Oh, for sure. I don't know. It's just one of those things where, fine, Rams fan, you want to be, well, all three of you, if you want to be, all negative Nancy about us winning that game, then sure, that's probably what you point to.
It's Rams fans is fine. It's when Seahawks fans are negative Nancy about the win. That's what's bugging me.
Yeah. Well, I think some of that has to do with the fact that it wasn't a dominant win.
Sure. But the idea of whether or not the Seahawks deserved to win that game. You know what I mean? Just because Rams gave it to us at the end, that we somehow aren't deserving of that win?
Well, we thumped them around most of the game. The score was closer than the actual performance on the field, especially in the first half. I mean, the Seahawks really did have a chance going into the last two possessions of the second half to put some distance between them and the Rams and keep this game from being at all interesting. So, I mean, they were thoroughly outplaying the Rams for the first half. Second half was about dead nuts even. Jared Goff came out. They had some adjustments, and he got his yards. Congratulations. And Russ went out there and was incredibly efficient and closed him out. So we beat him for a half. We tied him for a half. And so then we win. Like, they deserve the victory.
The Seahawks deserve the victory, of course. Yeah. So I want to go back since, you and I covered a lot of this in post game. You came on the Field Goals podcast. We did the post game show there. But
yeah,
we get to cover it twice again here in the bonus part this week, Adam. As I've gone back, I've gotten the Steve Rabel calls from this game. So not only can we relive this win, but we can do it through the glorious voice of Seahawks radio announcer Steve Rabel. Let's go back. Let's start with one of the plays that set up the Seahawks' first touchdown of the night. I don't know if a lot of people are covering this play in particular, but it was a long downfield play to one of Russell Wilson's new favorite targets, Will Dissly.
Here comes the pass rush. Russell has a lot of time. Now he can step up. Now he's going to throw. Wide open. Dissly makes the catch inside the 15-yard line. Russell scrambling to his right. Will Dissly somehow came wide open, running across the field left to right, picked up 36 yards and a big first down.
Officially called 38 yards and 81 yards receiving on the day. He had 7 rushing yards from the shovel pass. And I don't even know if that was Will Disley's most impressive catch of the day.
Was that the over-the-shoulder catch?
No, that was the one where it was a deep crossing pattern, and he was on the right sideline. DK Metcalf actually was lined up on the right side of the formation, and he goes out. He runs about 15 yards or so deep, and as Russell Wilson rolls out to the right, the defender who was on Disley comes up to cover Metcalf, who was the short option,
right,
and leaving the deep safety with Will Disley, and opens that up, and Russell Wilson able to go deep down the field to Disley.
Yeah, okay, now I remember. It's been a few days.
Yeah,
okay?
I know.
Like, you know, some of the bigger plays you don't quite remember, and sure, that was a nice catch, but to me, like you said, not his best catch of the day. The over-the-shoulder catch going up the seam on the left side.
Holy smokes.
That was a thing of beauty. I mean, Russ drops it on his face mask. I mean, it was perfect. It was perfection.
The concentration to hold on to it after it, you know, bounces off of his face mask a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, for a blocking tight end, he has some hella good hands, man.
He does, and it's coming in handy against,
dad joke of the day. Good job.
Oh, yes. Totally unintentional, too. Mm-hmm. But because you have those receiving targets, you're wondering who is going to be the number two guy, with Lockett clearly being the number one, and that looks like the number two is Will Disley.
It certainly does. I mean, you mix in a little DK Metcalf there. You saw Jerron Brown with a catch finally, instead of just blocks in the back. That was cool.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, Tyler Lockett is obviously the guy who stepped in for Doug Baldwin, and that's something we didn't talk a lot about in the post-game recap is we all kind of wrung our hands a little bit over, well, who's going to make those spectacular third down catches and bail Russ out when he's running around and have that sort of working relationship that Doug and Russ had. And it's turned out to be Tyler Lockett by a mile. And people are really starting, I think, finally to realize that Tyler Lockett's a great player in this league. And you combine him with Russ and it's a dangerous combo.
Yeah, not just the third down plays, but also some plays on first down.
Luke Wilson in motion on the left side. Russell, play fake. Steps back, has time, still surveying the field. Now he rolls left. Now he scrambles. Now he's going to throw to the back of the end zone. Reaching up, making the catch. Did he get his feet in? He did. Touchdown, Seahawks. The littlest guy on the field climbed the ladder, kept his toenails in, and Tyler Lockett put 6 on the board for the Seahawks from 13 yards out.
My favorite part of this call is just noticing the point in when the inflection of Rabel's voice goes from calling a routine play to calling a spectacular play. And it's right in the middle of, I think, of end zone when he realizes that Lockett has the ball and it's a catch for a touchdown.
Yeah, that's actually going to drop in that tiny little bucket in right into Lockett's
was
hands.
Incredibly well covered. The defender was right there in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, he was covered. I mean, incredibly well covered. That's giving a little too much credit to incredibly average Eric Weddle.
Well, I think Weddle was kind of holding up as he reached the sideline a little bit. Had he actually run through the out of bounds marker on the sideline there, I think he probably would have gotten in the way of the ball.
Well, he probably thought that it was being thrown away as well.
Sure.
I mean, really, to be, I guess, fair to Eric Weddle, one of the most overrated players in the league.
Yeah, you've been on Eric Weddle for a while now.
I have been off of Eric Weddle for a while. That's the whole point. I mean, back, 2-3 years ago when they're taking Earl Thomas and comparing him to Eric Weddle and being like, well, Eric Weddle's the better player. Really? Like, I've never seen it. I've never understood it. Is he a very solid safety? Sure. Is he amazing? Absolutely not. And Tyler Lockett made him look stupid, and that made me very happy. Just that play seemed to be a bit of a backbreaker for the Rams, too. Like, that just totally deflated that defense.
The funny thing about your disdain for Eric Weddle, it's not just because he's a Rams player. This goes back years and years before he was even with the Rams.
Charger. Yeah, we have back when he was a Raven and back when he was a Charger.
Yeah, you followed this his entire career.
Right. And it's not that I have disdain for him. Like, I'm fine with his incredibly average play. Like, that's good for him. He's a solid safety. But my disdain is for all the people that trip and fall over themselves, like just lauding the guy as if he's one of the top safeties in the league when he hasn't been for at least 5 or 6 years. I don't get it.
Well, we've talked about Tyler Lockett being a target. You mentioned this next player as being probably the number three guy, either Chris Carson or DK Metcalf being Russell Wilson's third favorite target. And he was looking for Metcalf as he burns Marcus Peters on the way to the end zone.
Russell play fake, drops back, going to throw it deep. Got a man. It's Metcalf. He's out there. Touchdown, Seahawks from 40 yards out. DK Metcalf just ran right by the Rams secondary. Russell hit his back foot and threw a rainbow to the end zone.
Yeah, super cool. Just another, I mean, it's not a fly route. It's a deep over, right? Which is a little different than some of the other routes run on his route tree so far this year. I think the corner thought he was going to have help over top Peters, and then he didn't. But then again, I mean, who knows what Peters is thinking? Like, sometimes he's, you know, he makes a guess and he's right on it and it's an interception. Many times he makes a guess and he gets burned deep. Him and Tlaib have not been playing well this year. And Russ took advantage of him all game, and even with the rookie.
You know, and maybe it was the fact that he doesn't run that particular pattern very often. Maybe he thought he was going to the left corner, and then when Russell rolled out to the right, maybe he thought he didn't have anything to really worry about in terms of Metcalf. So I haven't broken down the tape on that specific play. I just know that it was Metcalf all alone in the end zone and a great pass from Russell Wilson.
Yeah, it was a good pass from Russ. It was an easy throw for him. I mean, it was. I mean, all he had to do was just lay it out there and let Metcalf run underneath of it like he does, because he throws the best deep ball in the game. I mean, it's been settled now. We can all agree. It is easily the best deep ball in the game. And I'm still kind of just in awe a little bit of the season Russ is putting together and the way that he's taken quarterbacking to the next level. And then not only that, but finally for the national media through the course of the week to finally catch up and be like, oh yeah, he actually is great.
Oh yeah, he should be in the MVP conversation. How about that?
Well, and look, I mean, do you want to talk about that real quick? Because I've got some thoughts.
What else is there to talk about in terms of his MVP candidacy?
Well, the fact that everybody's just like, well, it's Mahomes. And then, you know, Russ, sure, we can talk about him, but it's Mahomes. And they're just like, it's Mahomes. There's no debate. And that's that frustrates me, because to me, like, most valuable player, right? Yeah. I mean, the word valuable, I mean, the value, right, to your team.
Sure.
Let's say you took Mahomes off of the Chiefs and you replaced him with
Alex Smith.
Yeah, Alex Smith, Gardner Minshew, you know, just anybody that's just dead nuts average, right? They're probably still undefeated, or at least close, maybe one loss, right?
So you're like a wins above replacement type of guy. You're into that stat.
No, I'm just into, there's a lot of talent around Mahomes, and like, you can get a mediocre guy in there. I mean, look, you saw Alex Smith do it, you know, 2 years ago with that team, and they've only become more talented. And like, he led him to the playoffs and with a win even. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not sure that, like, you know, the distance between what that team can achieve with Smith and Mahomes is all that different. You take Russell Wilson off of the Seahawks and you take somebody like Alex Smith and plug him in there. Are they 4-1? I sincerely doubt it. I bet you they're 2-3.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just, the amount that Russell brings to the table for this team is far superior to Mahomes. And I just to, you know, write in Mahomes because he can put up a little bigger numbers because he's got maybe a little more talent around him on offense is freaking lazy. It's lazy by the national media, and it pisses me off.
Speaking of those, you know, game-winning type of drives, you know, that's what we've always referred to, or I think you are the one to pick up on this first, is the stat, right?
Yeah.
The game-winning drive stat. When it comes down to the fourth quarter, your quarterback has the ball. Can he drive down and put your team in the lead in the fourth quarter and get the win? That's the stat.
Game-tying or game, you know, winning drives is the stat. Yeah. And they always show it, like, as a quarterback's getting ready to go and try to accomplish a stat, they show the stat.
And Russell Wilson now has 25 of those in his career, which ties him with former Seahawks quarterback Dave Craig.
Oh, there you go.
How cool is that?
Where does it put him among active players? I imagine it's like him and Tom.
No, you know what? There's actually quite a few players ahead of him in the NFL right now, because you have, Yeah, Tom isn't even the leader. Drew Brees is the active leader with 49 game-winning drives. Tom Brady, 44. Big Ben, 42.
So all three of those guys have been in the league twice as long as Russ.
Correct. And a couple other guys who have been in the league a little while, tied for ninth overall among all players, active or inactive, Eli Manning and Matt Ryan.
I don't know that they earn those ones.
They are in the top 10 of NFL game-winning drives, Adam.
Huh.
Matthew Stafford is at 13 with 34, Philip Rivers with 31. And then the next one on that list, Russell Wilson with 25.
Interesting.
I wonder if they're just past Andy Dalton. How's that for a name on that list?
You know what you would do here if you were a stats nerd and you wanted to make this an advanced stat?
Uh-huh.
You would take their success percentage in those situations, right? Like not just how many you have total, but compared to the opportunities that you've had to get it done, right? Sure. I wonder where that would all shake out to, because I mean, the Seahawks have been one of the top teams in the league when it comes down to winning games by less than 7 points. I mean, it's what we do. It's Pete Carroll's philosophy. Keep it close, keep it close, keep it close. Be more mentally tough with a better attitude going down the stretch and win it in the end. That's it. That's how he wants to play.
I wonder if that would add or detract from Russell Wilson, because he's had so many opportunities in the fourth quarter, if he's had more than other teams just because of the style that Pete Carroll likes to play.
I have a question. How many seasons has Russ had a losing record as a quarterback?
Zero.
Oh, so you're saying year in and year out, he does it more often than he doesn't?
No, but I'm saying in the fourth quarter when it's close.
Yeah. So to get those wins, would you not have to execute in the fourth quarter to get those wins so you don't have losing seasons? My guess is he's gotten it done far more often than he hasn't.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I bet it would do, if anything, it would raise him up in those situations.
So Russell Wilson tied for 26 overall, and that's, again, among active and inactive players in the NFL. If he gets one more, goes up to 26, he'll be tied with Boomer Esiason at 25.
So 26 all-time, and he's only 8 years in.
So out of all active quarterbacks, Andy Dalton's the next closest guy who came in 2011 and has one fewer than Russell.
Yeah.
That's weird to see Dalton in there.
Well, I mean, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while.
And then of other guys, you know, 'cause so many of those players are, you know, 2009, 2008 and lower. Cam Newton came in 2011, has 17 is all.
Okay.
And that's it out of the top 100.
Again, because I'm not into the stats thing as much as other folks. Like, eyeball test, like I feel much more confident with Russell Wilson coming back than, the vast majority of quarterbacks in this league right now.
Well, even Dave Gregg. I mean, it took him an 18-year career to amass that number.
And quite a few times where he didn't come through in that situation, maybe just fumbled instead.
Joe Montana, who you'd expect, who, you know, maybe he doesn't have that many because the 49ers also always had much bigger leads, but he only has 28 on his career, tied with Jim Kelly.
Yeah, I think they should invent a new stat. They should do a percentage, you know, stat success.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody,
success rate.
But give some credit to Adam for coming up with that when ultimately that stat does become available.
Yes, because it'll be one of the stats that mattered, a lot like you posted on Facebook the other day.
Yeah,
the stats that mattered in where Russell is just dominating in those categories.
Dominating in touchdowns, number one with 12, interception percentage, zero.
No, touchdowns don't matter.
I thought that was the one that mattered the most. That's why I put it up on top.
Oh, right. Sorry. I forgot. Points are the name of the game. You're right.
Not yards. You won't find yards on that list of stats that matter.
No.
Although Russell is top 10. Just, you know.
Hooray.
All right.
I mean, Jared Goff had over 500 yards in this game.
He did? Yeah. What, 500? What did you say?
I think he had 500 yards. Didn't he?
He had 395, I think.
Oh, all right. Well, Clinton Bonner had said something like in the Ring of Honor. I thought it was somewhere around.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. You don't trust.
Maybe it was 412. Something like that.
He had 395 passing yards.
Okay. So he had a crap ton.
The Rams had 477 total yards on the day, so they did beat the Seahawks in terms of yards, but you know, we count wins by points and not by yards. So, and you know, another thing that the Seahawks won was turnover battle in this game. Yeah. And the Rams coughed it up twice, and one of them was on this play here.
Receivers to both sides. This time Gurley gets a handoff, stutter steps, and Bobby Wagner is there to meet him. And so, ball is out. Did they strip the ball out? The ball was out laying on the ground. The Seahawks say they have it. Bobby Wagner grabbed the ball away from Gurley. Let's see if they're going to give the ball to the Seahawks. Hawks fell on it. Hawks ball! They stood up Todd Gurley, and all of a sudden the ball was just laying on the ground. And the Seahawks came up with it. It looked like Clowney maybe at the bottom of the pile. It is Jadeveon Clowney. Bobby Wagner just yanked that ball out, and the Seahawks dodge another bullet from this high-powered Rams offense.
And this was a critical moment in the game because this was the drive where the Rams were responding after the DK Metcalf 40-yard touchdown, and they just went right down the field. Yeah, they hand it off to Gurley. He gets 1 yard. But then three straight plays, a Goff pass to Reynolds for 12 yards, a Goff pass to Woods for 17, and then Goff throws it to Kupp for 25 yards. And that gets him down to the red zone on the 20-yard line for the Seahawks, and they force the fumble from Todd Gurley as Jadeveon Clowney and Bobby Wagner have to fight for who actually wins that particular play.
Yeah, well, either way, I know that Gurley lost.
Right.
And really, Gurley lost all night in the sense that the Seahawks really did shut down Gurley in the running game as a whole. And I don't know if you've noticed this over the course of the week here in the league, the teams that ran the hell out of the ball were much better than the teams that can't run the ball.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see that just looking at, say, Monday night with another NFC West rival with the 49ers. Ran the hell out of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And what did they do to the Browns? They stopped the run. Seahawks were able to do that against the Rams. And they're really able to do that against almost every team because they're actually built to do it. Like, that's the philosophy. I mean, really, the downfall of the Rams in this game was the loss of those two guards in the offseason and Whitworth getting older, their right tackle getting older, just taking a step back. And they're just not the same team up front. And it showed all night. You get Goff rattled a little bit. He's still able to get you down the field between the 20s. But then when he gets down into the end zone and the pressure's on, it's when he starts making mistakes. And we really were able to just rattle him all night. And at the end of the day, it's a win. And I think it's something that should give Sean McVay pause. I mean, the league is kind of caught up to this nonsense. And they've caught up to Jared Goff.
Yeah, just one passing touchdown on the day for Goff, and you know it was Gurley runs to get the ball in the end zone twice, and they had to settle for field goals in those other situations. So winning inside the red zone, it came down to the red zone scoring of the Seahawks in this game. They were much more dominant inside the red zone than the Rams were, and you saw that even on the particular play where that put the Seahawks ahead in the third quarter to David Moore.
Russell now from the shotgun with Carson in the backfield. Three receivers near side. Quick throw near side. David Moore makes one man miss. He is in! Touchdown! Seahawks! A 10-yard touchdown strike on the smoke screen near side to David Moore and Brian Schottenheimer. He gets the award for great play calls on that drive. And the execution was simply perfect. And the Seahawks are a PAT away from taking the lead.
The Seahawks get the PAT, go up 21-20, and then the lead changes, gosh, four different times over the rest of the game.
An exciting game overall. I mean, I definitely felt the ups and downs and roller coaster that a fan does, but just always had faith Russ was going to lead us back. And I mean, it's a good win, and I'm really excited about the idea that, I mean, once the Niners do lose, because they are, I mean, they can't play crappy teams every single week. I mean, maybe they can, but, you know, that's what they've done to this point. I mean, this win really propels ourselves going forward to taking control of this division. And it was an encouraging game coming off a short week against a team that had owned us the last three times that we played. You can see the progress the team's making, and it's fun.
It's really fun. It's fun knowing that now the Rams and the 49ers have to face off in this next week. So one of those two teams are going to lose. Either the Seahawks are going to, you know, be able to continue to stay ahead of the Rams, you know, not knowing we expect a win against Cleveland. But, you know, we'll get into that, too. But The 49ers could also, it almost doesn't matter which one of those teams wins or loses, because it, either way, it benefits Seattle in some way.
I honestly am rooting more for the Niners to win that game.
Yeah.
Just because it would knock LA back to 3-3, right? At that point, that would be a massive hole to dig yourself out of. I mean, that really does put you behind the eight ball. And then we've got our two opportunities still coming up against the Niners. And yeah. I feel very confident in those opportunities. Plus, I mean, I don't know which week it is that Jimmy G is going to go down, but he's gonna.
One of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we aren't into predicting those kinds of things, but it'll
happen. I'm not rooting for it. It's just it's a statement of fact. I would prefer, let me put this on record. I would prefer that Jimmy G stays healthy and we just beat the Niners straight up.
Yeah.
You know, going down the stretch here. But just the fact of the matter is he's never put together a healthy season. And I just don't see it happening this year. Like, I just need to see it first.
It's kind of Aaron Rodgers-esque. Rodgers is always getting hurt at some point during the season. And, you know, whether or not it's bad enough to take him out of the game or he can fight through it, Jimmy G hasn't really shown that he can fight through any types of injury. Well, because I think for the most part, they've been really significant injuries.
I was going to say, nobody's just fighting through an ACL.
No.
Like for a season. Like, that's not happening.
All right. Well, a couple other highlights from this game, of course.
Oh, we're going back. Okay.
Well, we have to get in at least all the touchdowns, Adam.
Oh, okay. This game was just like forever ago, and I'm looking forward to the Browns, man.
Okay.
Like, you know, it was an exciting game, but like, I'm really excited to go and kick Baker's ass. Like, I'm really excited to talk about that.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. Let's move on to the Browns, or as maybe we should also refer to it, the Sheldon Richardson revenge game.
Sure. Right. As revengey as Sheldon Richardson can be. I mean, we talked just a teeny little bit about the Browns, and you're like, well, you know, on that defensive line, who do you fear other than Garrett? You know, who do they have up the middle? And like, maybe your answer would be Sheldon Richardson. But I remember Sheldon Richardson like playing on this team. And yeah. I remember like when he was here and then when he wasn't here and how nothing changed. Like, he's not a guy that I look at that scares me at all. So no, I'm not worried about the Sheldon Richardson revenge game. And I don't think you are either.
No, it was just, I was trying to think of a guy who was, you know, could kind of dominate the interior for the Browns. And that was the only name that I could come up with. But, you know, saying he's a guy, he's kind of been just a guy so far.
He really has. And I mean, he has been the last couple of years. There's a reason why we decided not to pay him. There's a reason why the Vikings didn't decide to pay him. And now he's a Cleveland Brown, where he can go and watch his career die.
So is there any other pass rushers to worry about on that defensive line? You have Olivier Vernon, who's actually leading the team in hurries in the game, but Garrett leading in pressures, total pressures with 19, Vernon with 16, and then the only other guy to have double digits through five games is, I can't even pronounce his name, Ogunjobi?
I mean, no disrespect, I'm sure he's a fine player, but I have no idea how to pronounce that. I'm sorry.
We just need more guys like Denzel Ward on the team.
Well, you're asking about Olivier Vernon, and my question is it still 2019?
Yeah.
And not like 2015? Because if it is, then I'm not worried about him anymore because he's ancient.
His prime was about 4 years ago.
Right. So I don't worry about that so much. I mean, I think my biggest concern is just Myles Garrett lining up across a Fetty again and again and again. That concerns me greatly. But Russ is moving in the pocket better than ever. And the thing about it is why would I be overly concerned about the Cleveland Browns defensive line when I just watched the Seahawks go out and defeat the Rams against their defensive line with the best defensive lineman in the game, along with a couple guys who aren't scrubs, in Aaron Donald and company.
Right.
I just color me cocky, I guess, but I'm just not afraid of that.
Well, and it's hard to be afraid of it, too, when, you know, how many times are the Seahawks going to need to throw the ball when we watched the 49ers third string running back? And I guess I probably shouldn't say that with Breida because he doesn't play like a third string running back, but he just happens to be the 49ers third string running back just running all over the Cleveland Browns defensive line.
Yeah, I don't think Breida's considered their third string running back anymore, even as guys get healthy.
Yeah.
He's an effective enough runner.
He could be a starter on any other team that's, you know, looking for a good running back.
that's running back deficient. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like many guys in this league, I mean, it's one of those positions that you can find dudes pretty much wherever and have them come in and, you know, from a small school and still succeed. And which brings me to Chris Carson. I mean, Oklahoma State's not a small school, but a seventh round pick. And yeah, a guy
80 carries his senior year at Oklahoma State. So it's a guy who wasn't on really anybody's radar.
Right. So if I see Breida go through the Cleveland Browns defense like a hot knife through butter, I would say that my confidence level of Chris Carson doing that is extremely high. I would be unbelievably disappointed if we can't just run the ball down these guys' throats.
It would be disappointing. I do have concerns going into this game, though, just because of Cleveland. How many times, and this will be Russell Wilson's first time going to Cleveland, okay, but how many times going back have the Seahawks just had weird games in Cleveland?
Yeah. Well, again, clipboard Jesus is gone.
Yes.
So we don't have to worry about him playing quarterback. We have Russell Carrington Wilson, and that makes all the freaking difference.
That's true. Yeah. But there's been things, you know, like Leon Washington. Was that the Whitehurst game where it was the Leon Washington return that got called back, or was that the time before that they played in Cleveland?
I don't know. Both games were highly forgettable. I mean, I just remember the Whitehurst game and Marshawn being hurt for that game.
Yeah.
And just being like, oh, we're friggin' screwed. And it, like, what, it ended up like 6-3?
It was 6-3. I think that was the same game that Leon Washington had a touchdown return call back. But you go back, I think it was the last game before that where they played in Cleveland, and it was that overtime loss in Cleveland where the Browns won 33-30.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I guess so. But again, back in the day, totally different teams. In like watching the Browns on Monday night against the Niners, a couple of things like stood out. Like, first thing, number one, the Niners could run the ball at will.
Yes.
Number two, Jimmy G left a lot of throws out on the field. He missed dudes all over the place. I was just sitting there thinking, licking my chops, like, I can't wait for Russ to get a crack at this. Like, that's going to be a prolific day for him. And I understand that Kyle Shanahan, you know, schemes up some of these routes and gets guys open, maybe a little more than Schottenheimer does. I mean, not maybe, it's true. But, you know, you see that and you're like, well, I definitely think that we're going to be able to run the ball. Rush should be able to carve them up. And then just watching the Browns offense and how pathetic they are up front. It's a joke show. And basically you just put the handcuffs on Chubb, and then yeah, good luck with Baker beating you, who legitimately sucks this year. He sucks this year. And I'm not saying he's going to suck forever. I'm not saying that he sucked his rookie year. I'm just saying right now, Baker sucks.
Well, you know, part of it is the help that he has in front of him this year. The offensive lineman not giving him much help.
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it, because I watched Russell Wilson do it, you know, with a shaky offensive line for year after year of his career.
Oh, sure.
And now everybody's like, oh, well, Baker has a crappy offensive line. Well, isn't he the guy that was supposed to come in and be more Russell Wilson? Like, wasn't that how he was billed?
Yeah.
Well, sorry, your average athleticism doesn't get you out of trouble out of the pocket, and you're not the greatest in-pocket thrower. I mean, everybody raved about his accuracy. You know what his completion rate is right now?
Gosh, I don't know.
55% and change.
Wow.
55, that is abysmal. Remember that draft, and like, I sat there and was like, I don't know about this guy, but I really like Josh Allen. Well, he can't hit the ocean of 5 yards, Josh Allen. He's terrible. Guess what his completion percentage is this year? 62%.
That's better than Baker.
Eight picks on the year. He leads the league in picks right now.
Wow.
I mean, just overthrowing dudes that are wide open. Baker has regressed.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, I mean, Freddie Kitchens will get it figured out and everything. Or, you know, it's Freddie Kitchens' fault. Well, okay, if it's Freddie Kitchens' fault, wasn't that the same guy who, like, I don't know, unlocked Baker last year?
That's why he became the head coach.
Right. And now Freddie Kitchens sucks, and now that's why Baker sucks. See, I just don't quite get it. Like, either Freddie Kitchens is the guy that made Baker good, or he's not. Like, I mean, what is it?
The other thing about the Browns, heavily penalized team, 48 penalties on the year already for 423 yards. I tend to think of Seattle as a highly penalized team, but they have 37. They're 11 fewer than the Browns.
Yeah.
That's like a game's worth.
Hey, after the first 2 weeks, they've gotten it under control. the Seahawks. I mean, they're still going to get some boneheaded penalties. That's fine. It's part of the way we play. But it's better. And the Browns look incredibly undisciplined.
One of the things that I do wonder about going into this game, though, is their two top corners, Greedy Williams and Denzel Ward, have been out since, I think, week three this year. And they're listed as questionable going into this game. If they get those two back, that could really help their defense.
Oh, I can't wait for the rookie Greedy Williams to come back. Another Marcus Peters with his boom and bust kind of play. Russell Wilson will eat him alive. I'd just be looking his way all game.
Well, Ward's kind of having a little bit of a sophomore slump, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's nobody in the Browns secondary that you look at and be like, oh, there's a player.
Nobody?
Give me one.
I'm trying to click and come up with one.
I mean, even at, like, going through and looking at the roster, you're like, I mean, there's just not a guy that stands out as like, oh, he's up and coming, or, you know, just somebody that.
Well, Demaryius Randall.
I mean, him and Eric Weddle can have a lunch in the mediocre safety lunchroom. They can have lunch together.
Yeah, the high price guys that didn't stick with their original team that drafted them.
There you go. Where was Randall before?
He was in Green Bay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all know that Green Bay secondary was a vaunted juggernaut.
Randall had a good year last year with Cleveland.
Yeah, he's okay. He can play. I mean, he's okay. I'm not trying to pick out
their best player, Adam. I picked out the best one. What else do you want from me?
Nothing. Just admit that, like, this is prime for pickings for Russell Wilson and company. I mean, I don't know. It just watching the Niners just dissect them was fun to watch. Now, is there a difference between the Niners and the Seahawks defensively speaking, you know, taking on that Browns offense? And I would absolutely argue yes. The 49ers have a better crew when it comes to pass rushing. They just do.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that Ansa and Clowney and company can't dial up at least enough pressure. The Seahawks may not have a lot of sacks, but they have been harassing the quarterback with regularity. And Clowney has been disruptive. And it'll be enough to fluster Baker. Yeah.
And that's all you have to do. You have to get pressure on Baker Mayfield. His passer rating under pressure. I know we've talked about this in the pick show, Adam, for the first few weeks. I feel like it gets worse every time I look at this stat. Baker Mayfield's passer rating under pressure this year, 22.3.
I'm not an expert in these areas. Is that bad, Brandon?
I think it's bad. I think 22.3 is actually worse than if you just dropped back and threw it into the ground when you got under pressure.
Yeah, I was trying to set you up there. It's not just bad. It's abysmal. It's like worse than bad. It's about as bad as it gets. I mean,
yeah.
I just think that Baker didn't take the time in the offseason to get better. And to be honest, I just don't know what his ceiling is much higher than where he's playing right now. Considering his physical limitations, he doesn't have that great of an arm. He's not incredibly accurate. He's not an above average decision maker. He's not very fast. I mean, I think that's the one thing that's really caught up to him. And it was something I thought coming out of college. Being an average athlete, you can't run around and do Manziel things and expect to succeed as an average athlete. And these guys are better than him. These defensive linemen that he's trying to outrun.
Well, I expected his accuracy to at least be better and to be the best out of the quarterbacks in that draft class. I think that's why he went number one.
I probably would have picked Rosen out of all those guys if it was just straight up accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
More accurate than Darnold, more accurate than Allen, more accurate than Lamar, more accurate than Baker. I mean, I just watched Baker's tape back at Oklahoma. I mean, it was that Lincoln Riley, you scheme him up, have him wide open, and all you got to do is just run around and chuck it out there. Like, there weren't too many wow throws from Baker. Yeah. And the windows are tighter. And even with guys like OBJ and Jarvis Landry, he's got the struggles.
Yeah. You know, that if he's overthrowing those or underthrowing those guys, they haven't been able to bring it in. And there were a lot of times where I saw in that game against the 49ers where Landry and OBJ were open.
Yep.
But it was just not on the mark.
Right. And some of them too, he would even complete, but left a lot of meat on the bone because it wasn't an accurate throw. You know, he didn't, you know, throw the guy open per se.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to get that fixed in a week.
They have been kind of an up and down team though this year. They come out, they lose to the Titans, they look like they get things back on track against the Jets in week two. You know they're going into that game against the Ravens, and you're thinking, oh yeah, well here they go. And that was the game where Nick Chubb was really able to get it going on the ground. And I thought, you know, with the Ravens defense, they'd be able to stop a guy like Chubb. So that's really going to be the key for this game is the Seahawks defensive line. And if I'm looking at a defensive line that, yeah, they haven't allowed a running back to run for more than 70 yards, and that's even going up against Alvin Kamara, then I kind of like their chances to hold Nick Chubb too.
Yeah, just historically speaking, we are good against the run. That's how we're built. That's why you bring in guys like Al Woods.
Well, last year they weren't. And that's why they really set it to try and get back on track at stopping the run in 2019.
They weren't great at it, but they weren't abysmal at it.
Yeah, they were middle of the road, but Pete right. Carroll wants to be among the top teams.
Exactly. So it's not like they fell off a cliff. It just wasn't the best year under the Pete Carroll era
right.
when it came to stopping the run. And, you know, I look at that Browns team, and I don't think that they're going to be able to get it going on the ground. And the other thing is I mean, you said they're kind of up and down and bounce back, right? Well, okay, you lose to an average Titans team badly.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you beat an abysmal Jets team. Cool. And then you come back. What was the third game?
The third game was the Rams on Monday night, where they kept it kind of close, but not able to get the job done inside the red zone in a couple of those games. I think they would have, you know, that they should have, they probably should have beat the Rams, to be honest, if they have just a little bit better night.
Yeah, but they didn't, so they lost against a team that we beat. Yeah. And then you're like, well, then they bounce back against the Ravens, and you know that defense should have, that defense, like people keep talking about the Ravens defense as if it's good. Like I haven't quite figured that one out yet. I don't think the Ravens defense is all that great. I don't think it's been all that great for the last 2-3 years. But just because they've got Ravens on the side of their helmet, everybody thinks it's Ray Lewis and Ed Reed out there still for some reason. I mean, that I guess that's how Eric Weddle continued to be overrated for so long, playing on that Ravens defense. Everybody's like, oh, well, he's a Raven. He must be good. No, like the Ravens defense isn't that great.
Yeah, looking at their past games, if we're looking at the Ravens defense, you know, they held Miami to 200 yards, so that's not a big deal.
Hooray!
And the Cardinals to 350, which, you know, that's...
Again, hooray!
Kyler Murray's second game. And against teams that are actually kind of good, the Chiefs and the Browns, they've given up over 500.
Seattle feels like one of the teams that is on that cusp of... You know, some people still look at us as, well, they beat up on the bad teams and, you know, it's tough sledding against the good teams. I feel like the Browns are legit one of the bad teams. And so we should just beat up on them. You know, this wouldn't be a game that if they win by 2 or 3 scores that I'd be looking at and pointing to and be like, see, they're one of the best in the league right there. Like, that's not one of these games. Like, they should just beat them. And then that's that.
Well, it is a road win. Road wins are important.
It is.
And, you know, a road win here would put the Seahawks at 5-1, which is something that they've only done in 2013
right.
and 2003.
So the 2013 one being the relevant one just because of, you know, this coaching How staff and, you know, there's a couple guys left from that squad. But this is not 2013. And like, you know, what was it when we were 3-0? People would be like, well, last time they were 3-0 was when they won the Super Bowl. Like, stop it. Stop it. A totally different situation. Because I don't feel nearly as good about this defense.
No.
As I did about 2013. I mean.
Oh, no. In 2013, we knew that was a Super Bowl defense. But now it's different. Now it's the offense that's. You know, it's Russell Wilson that's leading this team. So I don't think we can really have a comparison to previous teams because we've never had Russell Wilson be this dominant as he's been showing us so far this season.
I would completely agree. I mean, out of all the different units on this team, I definitely believe in the offense a lot more than the defense. This defense is pretty okay. You know, I mean, they're the better of some of the average defenses. And I think they've got room to improve. I truly do. But, and this could be a game where you start to see some of that. I mean, man, this is a great game for Trey Flowers to end up with a pick or two. I'd imagine they'd be throwing at him all day.
Yeah.
And I like his chances there.
Gosh, you know, it's not like people aren't throwing Shaquille Griffin's way. And I don't think of Baker Mayfield as a guy who's going to avoid throwing, you know, when you have Beckham and when you have Landry, I don't think he's going to avoid throwing Griffin's way.
Oh, I doubt it, because he's cocky as hell, man. Did you see the article that came out today about Baker and how, like, a lot of the NFL veterans in the league just can't stand him because of how freaking cocky he is?
Yeah. Is that why Sherman decided to throw him under the bus for not shaking hands, even though he did?
I'd heard there was a quote from another defensive player on another team who had won a Super Bowl. And he said, well, he acts like he's won 10 Super Bowls and he hasn't won shit.
Right.
And it's true.
Yeah, I think that's just part of the way he is. And
yeah, that's part of the reason why I've never been able to stand the guy.
But you, going back to one of the things you said about throwing Trey Flowers' way, gosh, I hope he'll get an interception, because he's over.
I know.
I know he's only in his second year, but it's time.
Yeah,
it's time for Trey Flowers to get his first interception.
Yeah, he needs to get off the schneid here.
At some point, I feel like he has to become the type of corner that can make a play on the football and not just... I feel like he's playing safe.
Oh, absolutely. He's playing the Pete Carroll system to a T in terms of don't get beat deep. And he's like, I'm just going to do my job and call it good and not take any risks and, you know, just keep us in the game and Russ will bring us home. I mean, that's what he's doing. And part of the reason why the defense back in the day during Russell's early times would take more chances is there wasn't quite that belief in, well, Russ is just going to go out there and get it done in the fourth quarter. I mean, they were still learning that about Russ, and he eventually proved that out as something that he does on the regular. But I think the defense was more willing to take chances then. And maybe this is a difference, too, between the way Ken Norton coaches up the defense compared to Gus Bradley.
Maybe. But with Pete Carroll being the guy who is all about the ball, I feel like now that Russell's kind of in that groove, now that the offense, Carson seems to have his fumbling issues under control, two straight games without any problems, Russell Wilson taking care of the football so well, why not take some chances on defense? And, you know, if you do get beat, you know that you have that ability to come back, but go after the football more. Have Tedrick Thompson, maybe now that he has the pick in that game against the Rams, maybe we can start seeing those ball skills that we've heard so much about out in practice from all of the defensive players that talked up Tedrick Thompson so much.
Yeah, I got a lot I need to see from T2 yet. I mean, just on game day. I mean, that's great that he's practiced well, and it's great that, you know, he has these physical attributes that apparently make him a great candidate to be a starting safety in this league, but I need to see it put together on game day. And there just hasn't been all that much that has pointed towards his success. I just haven't seen it yet. I'm still waiting. That'd be great, because McDougald is really holding his own out there. And the weakest link right now is free safety.
So you were the one, Adam, you were the one giving me the hard time in the post game after Tedrick Thompson gets the interception. And I still was kind of dogging him a little bit, saying that he was, you know, I'm not totally sold on Tedrick Thompson, even though he got the pick. And one of the things that I'm looking at here now, Pro Football Focus grades. Yeah. Not always, you know, a mark of judgment and what we had looked for in certain situations, but passes the eye test here when I see Tedrick Thompson as the lowest graded player on the defense.
No, there you go.
You know, it's one of those things where looking at the stats, there's nothing that you could point to and say, you know, he's given up a ton of completions, because he's not taking a lot of penalties. He just has one. He has two missed tackles on the year. That's not terrible. Yeah, but he just hasn't made plays.
No, not really. I mean, it just hasn't shown up yet. And again, our buddy Jared, our Broncos fan friend on this last road trip, on our work trip, we were talking about this, and I'm complaining a little bit about the safety play of the Seahawks. And he's like, you know what? I don't even want to hear it. You had years and years and years of Cam and Earl. And yeah, these guys aren't Cam and Earl. Okay. Like, you got to recalibrate your expectations.
I just want two Bradley McDougals. That's okay. To clone Bradley McDougal, put him next to himself, and have two of those guys. I just, you know, pretty good guys.
Are we sure that hasn't already started? I think they may have already started the McDougal cloning experiment back at the VMAC. There's like a room that's like roped off and like you can't go and see.
See, if you cloned Earl Thomas, people would notice. If you clone Cam Chancellor, people notice.
Yeah.
If you clone Bradley McDougal, it goes under the radar.
There you go. He's what a lot of those prepper people call like being the gray man. Like if you go out and like everything has gone haywire and like, you know, you're not wearing anything flashy. You're not like yoked and jacked. You're also not big and fat. You know, like, you know, you just kind of look like a dude and like everybody will pay, you know, never mind. Bradley McDougal is the gray man of strong safeties and he's the perfect candidate to clone because, you know, he plays slightly above average, which is fine right now. I'll take it.
That's all we need. That's what I want.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, what do you say we take a break? Now that we've determined who the gray man is among the Seahawks defenders, take a little break, come back, and we'll get into our Welcome to the Flock segment, get into some Do Better and Better at Life.
I guess I better find a Do Better and Better at Life then. Okay.
You have the entire break to do it. It'll be fine.
All right, cool.
Getting into the second half of the show. Adam, we're talking about the Browns, talking about the Seahawks. I mentioned the fact that the Seahawks on the road, getting three wins on the road would take them to 5-1, and you know how that went back to 2013, how it went back to 2003. 3-0 on the road, though, that's something that hasn't been done in a long time.
Oh yeah,
1980 was the last time the Seahawks went 3-0 to start the season on the road.
So basically, we were both 1 year old.
Well, let's see. No, we were, we were one.
There you go. For
about 18 months.
About 18 months. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a little while.
So it's been a minute.
And they finished. What did that 3-0 record on the road to start the season get them that year? They went 4-12.
Oh, well, the wheels on the bus fell off, apparently.
Not the best year for the team that year. But
yeah, that would have been their, third year?
77, 78, 79. 80, fourth year.
Okay.
Or was 76 the first year?
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. Like, because I think they were incepted into the league in 76.
Established in 76. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. There's the word. And then I would imagine they'd have played their first game the next year. I don't know. It was before I was born.
It would be a really tough thing to figure out, to try and come up with that particular date. You know, a lot of work would have to go into just finding out exactly what year they did play their first game.
Right. Like Google?
Yeah. It was 76.
Oh, okay.
So it was their fifth year.
Fifth year. Yeah. All right.
And where was I?
I don't know. Talking about old school stat about a team that, you know, isn't this team now.
Yeah.
That doesn't really matter. You love those historical stats.
I do. I like looking that stuff up.
I just couldn't care
less.
Just
let me have this part of the podcast, Adam, where I bring some Seahawks history to the show.
That's fine. Go right ahead. It's fine. I just don't know how excited I can fake, you know, how much of that I can fake for you about that.
Okay. How about their last 18 10 a.m. Pacific kickoff starts? They're 12 and 6. 12 and 6.
There you go. Cool.
67% winning percentage.
Yeah, that's great because that whole 10 a.m. start crap doesn't matter.
It doesn't anymore. We're over it. And that's why I'm bringing that's why I'm bringing this up now, because that was an issue in the Holmgren era. We're totally behind that now. Don't say it was never an issue, because Mike Holmgren never got that crap figured out.
Well, he may not have gotten it figured out, but it wasn't because of the time zone. It was because of something else. That's a bunch of hogwash. I can't stand the whole, well, they have to go across a couple time zones. Cry me a catfish river. You know how many times I have to go across like multiple time zones and wake up at the butt crack of dawn and at like 4:30, be in the middle at 5:30. And you know what I do? My job. I just go and I do it, and I'm fine, because I'm not a wuss about a little bit of jet lag and a couple of time zones. It's so hard. Thank God Pete Carroll blew that out of the water.
Yes, thank you. See, give him some credit.
God.
Well, how about we give our executive producer some credit this week, Dustin Mock, for executive producing this podcast?
You know, there's a few executive producers in the podcasting arena, but none are as fine as Dustin. Like, I mean, he is the complete epitome of what it means to be a professional and just amazing. And we really just couldn't do the show without him.
No, But if we did have to task our executive producer, you know, with something for this next week, I think it would be go out to, and it would be to help us go out and find some new flockers, because no new members of the flock this week.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
We did a post-game show.
Yeah.
And in no new flockers. And not only that, but the post-game show was a Drunk Adam post-game show. This is what everybody seems to be clamoring for.
Maybe, see, I think I screwed up there. I should have put that in our feed and not the field goals feed.
Yeah, probably true.
Because then, okay, so I can't blame it on Dustin. It wasn't Dustin's fault this past week.
Well, it comes under his supervision that happened.
That's true.
Yeah. So, you know, crap flows down river, right?
So, no new members of the flock this week, but we have our...
Boo!
I know.
Boo!
I know.
That's me. I'm very disappointed by that. This was a big week. We beat the Rams, did a post-game show. We're doing a show this right now, this week, on a Wednesday, and, like, not one new little flocker, like, for reals. Like, we're doing our part.
I think we're actually going backwards. We actually went backwards since last week.
What do you mean backwards?
Well, I mean, some people have some things going on. They can't support the show, and that's fine. It comes up. But
how backwards?
Oh, like one or two.
It's unacceptable, soldier. All you freeloaders out there need to get your poop in a group here and become a little flocker.
Well, you know, the family things
Dustin
come
Locke
up.
Dustin Locke will find you.
See, that's the thing that maybe people don't understand, is once you become a member of the flock, you don't have. It's not like a lifetime commitment. Like things.
Yes, it is.
Well, you know, we commit to you as being, you're still a member of the flock for life.
Right.
So that's what we need to let people know. Become a member of the flock, try it out for a month. And if you don't like it, then you can back off a little bit. You're still a member of the flock, but
right.
you at least you got the feeling of what it means to support an independent podcast and just take in how that makes you feel.
Right.
Knowing that, yeah, you get value from this show every week that we bring you the show. You get four shows a month. You get four bonus shows a month with the pick'ems
you're
as a member of the flock. So, you know, just try it and see how that feeling makes you feel.
Yeah, it'll be a nice warm and fuzzy, and you'll be able to sleep through the whole night uninterrupted without the fear of being a freeloader and how that like just sits and, you know, stews in your psyche.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nightmares, freeloader nightmares. If you don't get in the flock, you're going to start having freeloader nightmares.
No pressure.
No pressure. I mean, it's just your sleep, which is like a third of your life. So don't worry about it.
I don't even know if I got any emails from this week. Oh, I did have a message from Daniel Weinholz, one of our loyal members of the flock.
Oh, yeah. Which, by the way, for Daniel, like if I need to come and like stick a shiv in somebody at his work.
Yeah, how did he not get a promotion?
I don't know.
That's unacceptable.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I'm willing.
How many buck knives has he sold through free promotion on this podcast for his employer?
Right.
And how do they thank him? They pass him up for promotion.
And that's why I wouldn't stab his boss with, like, a nice buck knife. I would do it with, like, a toothbrush that I sharpened into a point. Because he doesn't even deserve that for looking over our good buddy. I'm just mad. I'm mad and I'm outraged.
Yeah. Would you have whittled down your shiv using a buck knife?
No. I'd probably use like a dirty butter knife or something like that, just so that there'd be some extra infection on it. You know, because it's like a poison dart. You know, it's not just the initial puncture wound that gets you. It's
right.
You know, the staph infection that follows.
So you don't. You don't stab him with a rusty butter knife. You use the rusty butter knife to whittle down the shiv.
Yeah, because the shiv gets the nasties deeper, like into the bloodstream.
Ah,
it's science. So just give me an address, Daniel, and we'll get this taken care of for you.
We'll take care of it. Well, Daniel commented on the fact that Russell in that game against the Rams getting some free plays with the hard count. And it kind of got me wondering, you know, do you remember a game where Russell Wilson went with the hard count more than he did against the Rams? And maybe he was going with it more because it was working so well with him. He was trying to slow down that pass rush from the Rams. I just couldn't think of a game where he used it so much. And then on top of it, so effectively.
As far as so much, maybe this was a game where he used it the most. I mean, I've seen him go to it at times. There's no doubt about it. But this would make perfect sense to use it a ton in this game against a very aggressive front four. With that said, as far as him using it effectively, I remember winning an NFC championship game on a hard count in an offsides and a bomb to Jermaine Kearse. So the most effectively, I don't know. We went to a Super Bowl off of one. So, you know. Yeah, just something to think about.
I definitely remember that particular play. It wasn't as much of a statement of effectiveness in terms of overall how what it meant to a particular game. It just I think he had two or three times where they jumped over the line and he got a free play out of the Rams this game.
I would say that it is true that it's something that he did with more frequency in this last game than usual. But I think it's a reflection on him really getting to that point where he has quarterback mastery.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an aspect of the game that you try to do. I mean, Aaron Rodgers does it to all sorts of people, right? Been doing it for a couple of years.
He's been doing it for a little while.
Yeah.
Well, some people who had some pick'em mastery this last week, Mike's winning season, getting the win at 12 points this week, four teams with 12 points. And it was Mike's winning season that got the tiebreaker. He picked San Francisco and the Browns to go 24-14, 38 total points. He was the closest to the 34 total points scored in that game.
Oh, wow. Well, good for him, man. I don't know about the 12 wins. I mean, I only had seven, so.
I had 11.
Man, I just looked. Huh? You had 11?
I had 11 last week.
God damn it!
And what I almost switched my pick to pick San Fran over Cleveland, and I would have been in the among the top five if I would have done that.
So I can see one mistake here in my picks. Like I'm pretty sure I picked New Orleans, but yet I was down for Tampa Bay.
Oh yeah, well you screwed that up.
I guess, but you know, I mean, Cincinnati screwed me at home. The Bears screwed me.
I got Oakland. I had Oakland as my risk pick.
The mustache didn't come through for me.
Yeah, that didn't help me either.
I mean, good Lord, Philip Rivers and the Chargers lost to the win or lost to the winless Broncos.
I told you, you know, in the pick show, Adam, I said I had a feeling about the Broncos, and you're like, yeah. no chance. The Broncos get that win.
Yeah, well, I should have talked to our Broncos fan friend Jared beforehand because he's like, oh yeah, this is totally a game that we win and screw ourselves out of a real draft pick. Like, this is one of those, like, we're going to go on a 5-game winning streak for, like, no reason.
Uh-huh.
And then finish the year, like, 6-9. Or 6-10.
But, yes, a big congrats to Mike. And because he is a member of the flock, he gets a better prize. With the Paul Allen induction to the Ring of Honor, I figured, you know, I have one last PGA patch, jersey patch, to go along with a tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff, a Matt Hasselbeck piece of jersey and a football card.
Sweet. Well, there we go. See, the tiny pieces of stuff is really working out well for
us. Yeah, remember. And you can go to tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com if you want to listen to our show.
There you go. Nobody will understand why that web address is what it is, except for the few of you that have been listening for a while.
Seahawkers podcast is probably a little bit easier to type. But tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com, that works too.
Okay. I'm due for a better week on this pick'em stuff next week, man. Yeah, I'm due. I've had two bad weeks in a row.
You know, I was going to try and give you some solace and say that, well, at least with the Yahoo League this year, we're dropping the worst week. But you had your worst week last week, the week before last week. So
that's exactly right. Yeah. So maybe I'm on the upswing?
Yeah, you would hope so, yeah. And if you want to catch the results, you can go to SeahawkersPodcast.com/pick'em. The results are posted there. I guess I better give out GetInTheFlock.com because maybe I haven't been saying that enough on the show the last couple of weeks. If you want to get in the flock and you can get the bonus shows, you can get the pick'em results at GetInTheFlock.com.
There you go. That's a way for us to take responsibility for the fact that you know, nobody got in the flock this last week, I guess. Should we just take one for the team? Be like the anti-Baker?
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. It still feels more right in my soul to blame everybody else.
Maybe that's why it takes 2 years. Because, you know, I'll skip shows where I don't say it. And
yeah.
Yeah. That's why. We can take some ownership on this.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. All right, Adam. What do you say we get on to some do better and better at life?
All right, Brandon, my do better this week is for Ziggy Ansah.
Oh.
But you want to know why?
Yes.
Because I haven't really noticed him on the field.
Oh, yeah.
At all. We were all sitting here waiting. Oh, once Ansah comes back and we get Collier back. I mean, really, it should be for Collier and Ansah. Because, I mean, we're like, oh, we got Clowney. Once those other guys get back, we're going to have a pass rush. Da-da-da-da-da. This is going to be great. Yeah. Guess what's happened when he's come back? Diddly squat. You know, and it's just, it's unbelievably frustrating to me. And then you get quotes like this from Clowney talking about him and Ansah talking in the locker room. And he says, quote, "That's the funny part. We keep laughing in the locker room about us not being on the same page, about us not rushing as good as we normally do." That's not funny. That's not funny, Ziggy. Okay? Like, him and Clowney are having this conversation. Like, don't be saying that, Ziggy. What I want you to be saying is, you know, this is frustrating. We need to get our poop in a group here and actually go out and, like, get sacks. Put pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah.
It can't just be the Clowney show. You got to do your part. That's why we brought you in. You're supposed to be this double-digit sack guy, and I've gotten diddly squat. So I'm mad. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. And for Ziggy Ansah, do better.
Is there a way that we could have structured Ansah's contract so that if a player that, I don't know, like Brandon Jackson, has a similar or better stat line at the end of the year, that we could just move some of that money into the bank account of Brandon Jackson? Because I'm looking at it, and total pressures, Jackson has 6, Ansah has 6. Sacks, Jackson has 1, Ansah has 1. Tackles, Jackson has 8, Ansah has 5.
Yeah.
Stops. Man, Jackson's a stop machine. 8 stops. He's the leading defensive lineman. He's the leading guy on the team who is not a linebacker with 8 stops. So, yeah, I'm kind of looking at Brandon Jackson as maybe the second best pass rusher on this team right now.
He's certainly up there, right?
Actually, well, no, not second best. From the edge, maybe. You know, the 3 best pass rushers, Quentin Jefferson's been the most prolific one with 24 pressures, Jadeveon Clowney with 19, and Rasheem Green with 14.
It's been nice to see him step up his game a little bit.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that Green, Puna, and Quentin are all going to be seeing an increase in production here shortly, and that will lead me to my better at life here later.
All right. Well, my do better this week is for, well, let me set this up a little bit, because if you didn't see the Steelers game this past weekend, you probably heard about how in that Pittsburgh game, the cart wasn't working to get Mason Rudolph off the field. And, you know, oh, do we need to have a backup cart? You know, how many different carts do we need to have in place for, you know, Mason Rudolph to get off of the field? And so he doesn't have to walk off under his own power after they take off his face mask and he's looking kind of goofy. Man, give me a break. Yes. Okay. Everyone was saying that he shouldn't have been allowed to walk off the field. I think those people were right. Mm-hmm. But for everybody saying that they needed to have a backup option, they have 2 backup options. One, they have the little cart on wheels that, you know, rolls out of the ambulance.
Like in and out of an ambulance?
Yeah.
A stretcher?
That was on the field. They had that stretcher on the wheels on the field right next to them, and they didn't put them on it. So that, okay.
I wonder if it has the little hard tires rather than like the balloon tires, you know, like aired up tires.
Yeah.
Because I think that would make a difference on the turf. That'd be my only thing that I could think of on that.
Okay, but it was
out
there.
I think I'm leaning towards your second option here. I don't know what it is, but I think I have a guess.
Yeah, they have the actual ambulance that they bring onto the field. You and I have been to games, Adam, where they actually drive the ambulance onto the field, and it's not like Heinz Field is some old stadium where they wouldn't have built the tunnels wide enough to actually bring a vehicle on the field, unless it was built.
Well, Heinz Field is known for being kind of a swampy mess, like having terrible drainage. And maybe the ambulance would have gone out there and just gotten stuck. Like, they need more like a like an off-roader, you know, to go out there, like a four-wheel drive ambulance. But on top of all that, there's a third option, Brandon.
Well, the actual, you know, stretcher
the
board.
The stretcher with the handles?
Yeah.
That like you like that they use in a combat zone where you just get like five guys to hold on to it and like walk them off the field?
Or soccer
like,
players?
What, that wasn't an option?
That's the third option. Yeah, see, there's so many options. But that was, you know, for people who are clamoring for a motorized vehicle, that then an actual ambulance works as the motorized option. So, you know what? The thing is, when it comes down to it for me, they had like 15 guys who looked like doctors standing around Mason Rudolph on the field evaluating him. If he's okay to walk off the field and they think it's okay for him to walk off the field, I trust their judgment. We don't need to, I don't need to get on the fact that they need, you know, multiple options for carts to have backup carts in case of a cart goes down.
Right.
There's plenty of other options. The wheeled option was right there on the field next to him. He didn't use it. So anyone whining about how he didn't have a motorized cart to get him off the field, do better.
Well, here's the question though. Like nobody like, checks to see if the cart's working, like at the beginning of the game.
The reason like, that they said the reason they gave it wasn't working, it was operator error.
Operator error on a golf cart? You mean out of the two pedals, they couldn't figure it the catfish out?
So when I think of a golf cart and operator error, there's a couple different things going on. You either didn't turn the key to the on position.
Or the little transmission thingy.
Or you didn't put it in forward. You didn't switch it over from neutral to forward. Those are the two things that can go wrong when operating a golf cart.
Do you think maybe they just forgot to hook it up to the charger?
Well, they didn't charge it. I bet those are gas powered.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like the electric option would be the foolproof one.
Okay. Well, I guess it could have either been not charged or out of gas.
But that's not operator error.
No,
that's preparation error.
That's maybe you're just putting it on the operator for not preparing.
Maybe, man. I don't know. That's just pathetic all the way around.
It was pretty bad. It was a bad look having Mason Rudolph walk off the field.
It was, especially since, you know, you could tell he wasn't there.
No.
Like with that goofy grin. It was a little like Keekly when he got that huge concussion.
Yeah, and he was kind of crying coming off the field.
Yeah, and you could tell he just wasn't there. Like, he was just out of control of his emotions at the moment. It was weird, man. He dropped like a bag of bricks, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I wouldn't call it a dirty hit on Earl, but it should have been flagged, and Earl needs to come in a little lower.
Yep. Yeah, all those things, right?
Yeah. Earl was contrite about it after the game, too.
Yeah, I don't think... Over the years, I've seen Earl hit big, right?
Yeah.
He's never hit to like permanently injure somebody.
Right.
That's never been his goal. That's not who he is. He's not Vontaze Burfict.
No.
Right.
Yeah. Who's did he actually appeal that suspension? Have we heard?
And he lost it. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's out for the year. And I hope that's forever.
That's pretty steep, though. 12 games.
No, it's not. This guy's a habitual offender. He does this crap year in and year out.
Yeah.
He's trying to get somebody like permanently paralyzed. Like he literally plays the game that way. And I've got no room for him in this league.
Yeah.
Like I just don't. Like I watch everybody else play this game. And sure, occasionally they may have, you know, the hit like Earl did against Mason Rudolph. Right. But what is this? The 12th, 13th, 15th time with Burfict? He's a dirty player and a dirtbag I don't need in this catfish league. See you later.
You know, that hit on Doyle, it was pretty dirty because you've been told over and over not to go in with the crown of your helmet. And he saw Doyle getting up and he had the right to tackle him because nobody had touched Doyle. But rather than, you know, just putting him on the ground, he lowers the crown of his helmet right into, right into Doyle's helmet.
Yeah,
it was messed up.
He's a jerk.
But 12 games seemed a little steep to me. I guess just when, you know,
all the games, forever games.
Yeah,
that's how many games he should have been suspended. Forever games.
It'll be his last year with Oakland. And I guess I'd be surprised if somebody actually picked him up.
All right. Let's not talk about negative things anymore. Let's talk about some positive things.
On a positive note.
All right. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week as far as general manager John Schneider. Why? Because he's got the cavalry coming for this team when it comes to the pass rush. And as 12th Man Rising, one of their articles pointed out, he doesn't even have to make a big move to get it done. Because it's gonna happen without him lifting a finger. After we play the Browns, guess whose suspension has been lifted?
Jaron Reed.
Jaron Reed, a man who had over 10 sacks last year, 20-odd some quarterback pressures, a guy who gets pressure up the middle. This is somebody that can actually work with Clowney instead of joking about it in the locker room that he's not on the same page like Ansa, and really elevate the play of not just Clowney, but of Quentin Jefferson, Puna Ford, Rasheem Green. This guy's going to be a huge addition to this team. And for John Schneider to just having had drafted him out of Alabama, not panicking going into this year when seeing the pass rush, you know, slow to come together, and just holding on to his cards and being like, once we get Jaron back, this is going to be a different ball game. John Schneider with the ace in the hole, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I'm fired up, though, about the idea of having pass rush.
It's going to be great. It's going to help a lot. I think this is going to be a difference maker for our team going down the stretch where all of a sudden the national pundits go, wait a second, what changed with this team that's made them even more dominant? That, like, now we got to talk about them as one of the legit Super Bowl contenders along with the Patriots and the Chiefs. And now everybody's on the Green Bay wagon too. Like, good luck with that.
It's because they beat Dallas.
Yeah. Who hasn't beat anybody. So neat.
Not anybody good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody. But
that's what I want to get into our pick show this week, Adam, is try and nail down who the best of the bad teams are and who the worst of the good teams.
Okay. I think I can handle that.
All right. Well, that's something to tease for those members of the flock who get the Pick'em show. Let's close this out, though, with my better at life this week. And I'm going to give it to former quarterback David Carr, who does the offensive player rankings. And looking at week 6, guess who's number 1? Russell Carrington Wilson, as it should be. And it is about time. And it took Mahomes having a bad week to knock him off number 1. But there are other options out there. Christian McCaffrey having a great year with the Carolina Panthers. You got Alvin Kamara having a great year with the Saints. Dalvin Cook. I would put, I don't know how he doesn't have, does he not even have Deshaun Watson in his top 15? I'd put Watson up there.
Yeah. I mean, he's played pretty good ball for a team that's going nowhere.
But because of his showing on Thursday Night Football, Carr has this to say about Wilson. The Seahawks QB1 continues to prove why he should be considered for 2019 MVP honors. After week 5, in which Seattle earned a big-time divisional win over the Rams, Wilson leads the league in completion percentage, 73.1, TD to INT ratio, 12-0, and passer rating, 126.3, and sits second in pass yards per attempt, 9.0, among 35 qualifying candidates. See, he needs to use the adjusted yards per attempt because Wilson's leading the adjusted yards per attempt stat.
Yeah, don't care. It's still killing the league in touchdown to interception ratio. You know, things that matter.
Yeah, and for Russell Wilson, for leading the league in stats that matter, and for David Carr recognizing it and for putting him in at number 1 in his offensive player rankings, David Carr, better at life than Skip Bayless.
You know, I've always respected David Carr. I think that his career didn't turn out as well as everybody maybe had hoped for when he was drafted number 1 overall. That poor guy got obliterated on the Texans.
I put that on the Texans organization.
Yeah, I mean, he was tough as nails and really did give it his all. I mean, I don't know that anybody... I think if you had put Tom Brady in that situation, the result wouldn't have been that much different.
I mean, you have to have time to throw the football.
At least some. You know? Yeah, that was tough. Coming in, first-year expansion team and just getting hammered. And it's tough.
I wonder if you go back... I wonder if there's stats on the most quarterback hits over like a 3-year stretch run to start their career, if there's anybody who took more hits in their first 3 years than David Carr.
I actually think that there isn't. Like, I think I've seen that before. Like, that's a legitimate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cause that feels, that would, That would match up to the eye test.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he did. That third season was the closest that he got to a winning season with the Texans, going 7-9. But, yeah, that's too bad. But you know what? He can feel better knowing that, yeah, while his career, you know, it didn't quite work out for him as a starting quarterback, but now he has a better at life than Skip Bayless trophy he can put up on that mantle. We might need to mail him his better at life than Skip Bayless trophy.
There we go. And he, you know what? He does a good job as an analyst overall. I do enjoy his commentary. I think he's a smart guy. And, you know, even though he played for the Niners, I think I can forgive him for that.
It was just 1 year, though.
Yeah. But at least he's finally recognizing, you know, from a national platform, the greatness of Russell Wilson, because Russ really is, man. This is fun to watch. Appreciate this, guys. I mean, we could have about a 3-year run here of peak Russell. I think this might be just the start of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we get to see it next week against the Browns in Cleveland, where he goes and he steals Baker's lunch. And I can't wait.
I can't wait either. And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.